Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting of the Stanislaus County Employees Retirement Association meeting to order. Roll call, please. The June 27, 2017 regular monthly meeting of the Stanislaus County Employees Retirement Association.
Donna Riley.
Here.
Michael O'Neill.
Here.
Jeff Grover.
Here.
Mandy Dillon.
Here.
Mike Lynch.
Here.
Darren Garrett.
Present.
Gordon Ford.
Jagan Raja Ford, Mr. Ford is here.
Sam Sharp. Joan Clendenin.
Here.
We have a forum.
Are there any announcements?
Huh?
He didn't call my name, but I am here.
He didn't, Jim DeMartini, I'm so sorry.
Just missed him, he's so short.
I'm curious, did you have him marked as here or not before he said that?
Announcements? Do we have any announcements?
She doesn't want to leave.
None? Okay, public comment, I do not see anybody from the public here that wishes to speak. No, okay. So we'll move on to item five, the consent calendar. I'll give everyone a moment to review the items as listed on the agenda.
I'd just like to comment on the staff monthly report, and I'd just like to note that there are no issues regarding insurance. A year or two ago, we were having quite a few issues regarding insurance, so I think it's commendable that that's not happening anymore.
I just have a couple changes on the minutes as given to us in our packets. First, on item one, calling the meeting order, it should read Deputy Jason Garner and CSO Rochelle Johnson. And then on the second page, there's just a few areas that are listed out of order. So where it says Darren Garrett recused himself for item 5C2, that should be listed right after the items on 5E. And then where it says I returned at 1:34, that should be at the bottom after the vote was taken, just so it looks proper. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so yeah. It's in the correct spot because that's the vote.
Right.
So I'll move that one.
Oh, yeah, just move that one down. Yeah. Okay, and that's all I have on the changes to the minutes. Anything else? I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Motion to approve the consent calendar.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, motion by Jeff Grover and second by Donna Riley with the changes as addressed. Any further comments? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So moved. We'll now move on to item six, investment manager presentation. Oh, excuse me. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one. Executive Director Investments.
This item is item 6A, quarter one auxiliary investment report, and this is a information and discussion item. I'm just going to take a few minutes and go over this. We don't have a very long meeting, so we'll just spend a few more minutes with this. If you turn to page one, yes, sure. If you turn to page one of the quarterly report, and if you look at the value added relative to the passive benchmark, you see that we've got it broken down by domestic equity, passive, active, and international equity. And you see that for the first three quarters of this fiscal year, the portfolio has performed very well relative to the passive benchmark, adding about $11.5 million in value. And if you turn to page two, you'll see for this fiscal year to date, the portfolio has done well, even better, adding $26.7 million relative to a passive investment. So this is a big change from the year prior, and it really goes to show you how there can be a lot of variability in the ability and the success of the managers from year to year. Last year, we lost almost $30 million relative to a passive benchmark, and this year, we've made it up in three quarters of a year. So it's just, I think it's interesting to note how that number can change from year to year going forward.
Rick, do we only have the data for the last 2 years? I mean,
oh no, I can go back to early 2014.
I mean, is it like a coin toss deal?
Well, last year was probably the worst year that we've had ever since I've been here. The portfolio had accumulated about $50 million up to the beginning of last calendar year. And then last calendar year, we lost quite a bit. A lot of that was due to Jackson Square. There was one manager that really underperformed, and I think they had lost something like $17 million relative to the benchmark. So that really hurt us last year. But in general, prior to last year, we have done very well, and we've picked it up again.
Okay.
One of the things I've noticed, which is very odd, and nobody has really been able to speculate on this, but our managers seem to do better when the markets do well. And when the markets don't do well, they seem to underperform the benchmark. Remember, this is a relative analysis, so there really shouldn't be, they should be able to do as well, or we'd like them to do as well, when the markets are doing well or when they're not, because, again, this is relative to a benchmark. So why there's a relationship between when the markets do well and their ability to earn excess returns and vice versa is something that nobody's really been able to shed any light on. But nonetheless, that's the way it is.
Okay, thank you.
Page 3 is our quarter 1. We can just skip to page 4. This is the first quarter. And that lower right number, the portfolio has added about $2.5 million. Page 5 is our investment fee summary. This is new. These next two reports are fairly new. And you can see that overall, the entire portfolio, that 50.1 number in the upper right, that's the amount of fees that we pay to manage this portfolio for the first three quarters of this fiscal year. That's an annualized number. And you can see it broken down there by managerial, performance, other, and custodial fees. We've also broken down the fees by asset class, by investment discretion, and by investment style. And you can see that it's pretty plain to see that the alternatives and the real assets are the asset classes that are taking up a lot of the fees, consuming most of the fees that we pay. Yes?
Let's go back a couple of pages. What happens to the fees we're required to pay when an anything like Jackson Square was the $17 million?
Well, if we don't have a performance-based fee schedule, nothing happens. We pay, the amount that we pay is relative to the size of the portfolio. So our fees would actually go down if they do poorly because the value of the total portfolio would go down. But we do have several managers. We have two of our equity managers that are on a performance-based fee schedule, and we'll be able to see those in a couple pages. And then all of our alternative managers have a performance fee embedded in their performance.
That percentage. That we
yeah, because they have that hurdle rate, and once they get over that hurdle rate, then they share between 15 and 20% of the profits beyond that hurdle rate.
If there's no profit, there's no share.
Correct.
Well, there's a base fee that's very low.
A managerial fee.
There's a modest fee.
Everybody gets X number of
That's correct.
Yeah.
So if you see this one guy getting 8%, 814 basis points, there must have been some good growth in there, or he wouldn't have got that.
So let's talk about that one. That's a good one. So you're on page 5, Jeff?
I am.
Yeah. So the second to the last.
Next to the line.
Yeah, that infrastructure line. So that's only one manager. That's Morgan Stanley. That's the only manager we have in the infrastructure space. You see, though, that there's no performance dollars that we paid Morgan Stanley. Why that number is so large is because of this issue where we pay fees on capital that hasn't been committed yet. But when we calculate these numbers, we're calculating only over the amount of money that they've actually invested, not the amount of money that we're eventually going to give them to invest.
Okay.
So it looks very large, and we saw this with Raven One. It looked very large at the beginning. But as the investment period wore on and they got more and more of our capital invested, that number slowly trended down. So you're going to see those types of numbers early on in the investment period with these alternative managers. However, like we've talked about the last couple months, this is something that we're going to negotiate out of contracts going forward because it's a trend that's starting to be prevalent in the investment world when it comes to these types of investments.
Thank you.
So moving on to page 6, kind of what you saw on page 5, but it's just a more graphic approach. And one of the things I found very interesting about this, if you look at the lower right pie chart, you'll see that 36% is the fees for the private credit space. 36% of the fees we pay are consumed by 5% of the portfolio allocation. That's very interesting. And you can also see in that middle pie chart that 99% of the fees are to active investments, whereas only 1% go to passive investments. So it kind of shows you how cheap passive investing is. Page 7, same information, but it's broken down by each individual manager. And in fact, we've even granularized it even more down to each individual manager within our manager of managers. So you don't see Legato and Cat Prospects there, but there are the sub-managers that work for them in this chart here. Page 8. Auxiliary information for all our alternative investments. This is, if you've heard of AB 2833, and this is the new reporting requirement for the state of California that requires us to collect information from our alternatives and put that out for the public to see. This page here captures about 90% of all the stuff that we're already required to report by AB 2833. There are a few other things that we're going to ask each of our managers to give us that we will be in full compliance with this, but we do have some time there, and we're working on that right now.
And who do you report it to?
We put it out there just for the public to see.
Like in the minutes, it's fine?
Pretty much like we're doing right now.
Hey, Rick, but on this, on the analysis, we have a management fee of $2.7 million. We have other expense of almost a million. Then we have a service fee of $330,000. What are the differences?
So other expenses, I can tell you, are things like accounting, legal. Natalie, jump in here if you can.
Audit, legal, tax preparation fees, bank fees, normal.
So they're overhead fees.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, so the management fee is just what they take. There's no expenses they're taken out of that.
So looking at this chart here, what you can see, there's a few interesting things here. And these, again, these are required to be reported by AB 2833. And it's this middle section, this performance measurements since inception. And you can see the net IRR. And this is our Raven one. So this was the first alternative investment that we actually entered. This is on page 8 that we actually entered into. And you can see Raven's net IRR is 2.14%. If you go up one line, you can see that the target net returns were between 13 and 17. This is what the firm touted when they came and sat before this board and said, this is what we think we can earn. Investment multiple, realization multiple, and residual paid-in multiple. So the realization multiple, that 56 cents, what that means is that for every dollar we've contributed to this investment, we've gotten back, they've given us back 56 cents. On every dollar that we've gotten back. The residual value paid in multiple, for every dollar we've put in, we've gotten 49 cents in value relative to the value of the investment today. So in other words, the current capital balance, if you go up to the block before, the value of the investment as of this reporting date is $16.9 million. So that paid in value says we, for every dollar we've contributed, we've gotten 49 cents back in terms of the value of the investment, that current capital balance. So the investment multiple simply is the sum of the two. It's for every dollar we put into this, we've got $1.05 back in terms of money we've received back or the value of the investment today. And so let's look really fast at a couple other of our managers.
Well, just one quickly.
Sure.
Are we going to approach the 13 to 17 with Raven or not?
In my opinion and estimate, no. I don't think we'll come close to it.
I think on that one you'll be lucky if we get the hurdle rate.
I would agree. 7-8%?
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll start to come into focus a little more as they start to sell the assets in this portfolio. But for right now, I don't see how
that's
going.
Is that the one that we had the boat?
We just gave them overtime on it.
Yeah. Yep.
So they can try to maximize the asset.
And then if you wanted to look at that upper right graph there, that's the J-curve that you hear about. We heard about so much while we were investing in this, in these asset spaces. And at some point in time, the money we get back is going to be greater than the money that we contributed. And when that happens, that J-curve will reach that line, that horizontal line zero, and continue to go above it.
Yeah.
It'll become a J instead of just a hole in the ground.
Right.
Looks more like a W than a J.
Although realize, though, that most of these investments, based on the research I've done and looking at other systems, they don't pierce that J curve, that horizontal line at zero, for 5 to 6 years. So we are still below that. So it's not the case that these investments are doing bad right now. It is the case that it still might be a little premature to start placing a judgment value on the investments.
Oh.
Right.
This is the J.
Page 9 is Medley, and again, you can thumb through these at your leisure, but it shows all the net IRRs, and that's really the number to look at. Some of our best performers, White Oak is doing well on page 10. Their net IRR is 8.15%. But if you go to page 11, the beginning of our real estate investments, nearly all of our real estate investments are doing quite well. That just may be a function of the market in general. I would imagine that that has a lot to do with it. But the real estate investments are actually doing quite well for Stan Sara. And then the other two, the last two on pages, I believe, 14 and 15, they're really too early in the investment period, to make any type of judgment on how they're going to do. And that's why the net IRRs are negative right now on those. And then the last two pages are the cash flow report, but I think that those are very self-explanatory, and I think they need no explanation. And that's my report.
So has our expansion into alternative enterprises been a positive one so far?
I think that for me, and probably for you, the things you should be considering are the returns and the fees that we're paying. What I see is these investments are requiring a lot of fees right now, and I think they're good investments. I don't think there's something that we shouldn't be looking at, but I think that when we go to re-up into these asset classes, I think that we have learned a lot from this stage, and I think that we should play hard and negotiate very tough when we go in for our fees. I think the fees are one of the biggest things that drives the return, and I also think that each quarter the managers write up or write down the value of their investments, and the biggest contributor to the net IRRs are how much they write the investments up or write them down in the fees that we pay. Other than the fees, there's not much we can control here, though. Once the managers get our money and they invest it, then we're in for the long haul.
So, Rick, I had a question. So, in these type of investments, what is like a good range of time before we say whether it's going well or not? How much time should pass?
I think you got to give it at least 5 years. And again, 5 to 7 years is generally the time when you get your initial investment back. And I think once you get your initial investment back, the investments are seasoned enough to where then you can put some stock in the remaining value of the investment that still sits out there. And then you can start to get a good idea of what your prospective returns are going to be as they start to sell these assets off. Mm. So.
Okay, thank you.
Like with Raven and White Oak and those three, if two... or on the plus side, and one remains on the minus side consistently, don't we need to do something about that?
You mean the one that's not doing well?
Yeah.
Either
if it reverses.
I don't know if there's much you can really do once you get into these investments, and I think that what we really should be focusing on is the asset class in general, because we all know that we're not going to hit a home run with every manager that we hire. But which is why we diversify across asset classes and spaces. So I think that we should be focusing more on the asset class itself and how that's doing overall, as opposed to individual managers. This is not the same as one of our domestic managers that are managing our portfolio, where we can just say, you know what, we don't want you managing our money anymore. See you later. Once we sign these contracts, we're pretty much married to these guys, and all we can do is be diligent in the way we gather information from them, process the information, and relay it to you guys for, you know, for your judgment, essentially.
Well, we'll have a chance to get out because there's a there's an ending date on the fund.
That's
yes.
what I thought.
They all. Oh yeah.
And then we had.
No, no. And we just gave him another year to try to improve some of his assets.
Okay.
But we'll get that money, and he'll have another opportunity for us to go into. So we'll just need to be wise enough to decide: do we want to do that again, or go somewhere else for money?
So at the end of this year, if Raven is doing worse than it is now, we have an opportunity.
So there's no. There's
well,
no.
Well, wait a minute.
19, though.
Yes, once that period ends, though, that's when they're going to start to liquidate the portfolio. But they've got 2 or 3 years beyond that point to get rid of the portfolio. We don't want them to force them to have to liquidate this portfolio lickety-split. So we want to give them time. So we're going to be exposed to this investment in particular for, I'd say, 4 or 5 more years at least.
So unlike the domestic equities, when we don't like a manager, his performance has been bad for, you know, 3 quarters in a row or 3 years in a row or 5 years in a row, where we can get rid of them like we did Montezuma, I think, or whatever. Yeah, we can't do that here.
Correct.
We're stuck.
Now, yes, you're right. One thing I found out, though, a couple months ago when Ed was here, which I didn't realize, and I may have spoken out of turn, but he corrected me, there are ways to get out of these funds. You have to take a haircut, but the haircut is not as big as I thought it would be. So there are ways to get out of these funds if we
basically
really, really wanted to.
What you would be doing is selling your position to somebody else who wants
another
to
investor.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a lot of funds that actually do invest in secondary offerings in private credit.
Right.
So that's a pretty liquid market, from what I understand.
There's bargains out there.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Okay.
Anything else? Okay. Item 7, Beerus.
Okay, Ed is not here today, but there was really nothing for him to report out, but I will report out one of the things he changed in the 12-month work plan. And if you look at that, on July 2017, which is next month's meeting, there was a private market approaches, and that's been pushed to August, and that's the only change. The flash report, another pretty decent month for the fund. At the end of May 31st, we were at a 13.3% return. And before I presented to the Board of Supervisors a couple weeks ago, I did a calculation as of about the first week in June, and that was about 13.5%. And so I would expect that we're probably going to hit somewhere between 14 and 15%, barring anything in the next 3 days. There is 3 days left of this fiscal year. So
where do you think that'll put us, roughly?
I think if everything stays status quo for the next 3 days, we'll be between 14 and 15%.
But the total market value of the fund?
So we are at, as of today, we are at $1,993,000,000. It just hasn't quite gotten that last push to get us over the $2 billion mark.
I remember when we first got to $1 billion.
Yep.
But you're old.
I remember in like 2008 when we were 850 million, yes. And we had been at 1.4 billion.
What year did we cross into?
And we had board members that wanted to get us into 2-year treasuries at that time. I do remember that too.
I don't know, honestly. I can't tell you. I don't know if anybody here remembers. I wasn't here when that happened, so I don't know.
Was it that late?
I thought Robert left in 2004,
yeah.
And we hit it before
was
he left.
Robert Harmon was the administrator?
Probably about 2002, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a while ago. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's been 10 years?
15.
That's about right, because what we did an analysis a couple years ago, and what we found is that the portfolio numbers tend to double every 12 years. So that sounds about right. Okay.
All right, we're almost there.
Shortest meeting of the year.
Yeah. Okay, item 8, Executive Director Administrative, the Information Technology Solutions Project Update.
And this is Don Lee's item.
The project is moving forward as scheduled. The scanning project with FNTI that was taking place in this room here has been completed. They left last Friday, so that got done on time, on schedule, on budget. So our staff are now working on trying to adjust with, to having no paper files in the office. Everything we want to look at is digital now. So we're pulling it all up on the computers and trying to adjust, and everybody's doing well so far. And everything is still on track. We're having a lot of meetings and making a lot of decisions and moving forward.
Don, are the lack of files being physically in the office impacting how long it's taking people to get estimates?
It definitely did have an effect because there was lag time between when they took the files and when we are able to view them. We just got our last delivery of files.
Excellent.
So we now have them, and we have already been able to increase the number of estimates and buybacks that are going out currently.
Perfect.
We had several went in the mail on Monday.
And we are working overtime on Saturdays, right?
Not this Saturday, but next Saturday to try to make another push to get more help.
So, Donna, had you heard that it was taking long?
I did hear from someone that it was taking an extended period of time while the files were missing. Or, not missing, but I mean, in absentia.
Another reason for the length of time that it's taking is because instead of just taking a file and producing either an estimate or a buyback, we're doing a full file audit on each one, because that's another part of the process of cleaning up the data to go into the new system. So that takes a lot longer to do a full audit on each and every file. So that's why in the last 8 months, I think we started that process about 8 months ago, it's been taking longer for at least 8 months because of the audit, and then now with the files being gone, that slowed it down even further.
And Don, update everybody. I mean, if they're a longtime county employee, payroll records that are old are in bad shape, and it's taking a lot of eyes on auditing to verify those payroll records, right?
A lot of manual processes. We only have electronic data back to 1999 from PeopleSoft, from the county, and so everything before that, there is one other electronic system that's not completely reliable, but it's good, and then beyond that, we have paper records, and then beyond that we have microfiche records. So we do spend an awful lot of time of doing manual searching for all of this stuff to try to get the data clean, and that's why the audits are so complex and
good,
so
to have
time
clean
consuming
data.
Absolutely, and we are making great strides in cleaning the data, and so it's worth the time. I know it's frustrating to members sometimes, but in the end, when the new system is up, they'll be able to access through a portal, and they'll be able to see their own personal information, and what they're seeing there will be much better, much more accurate, much more thorough than if we weren't taking these steps now.
Yeah. Well, prospective retirees.
Yes.
I was cleaning out some files, and I found the page you calculated mine on with a pen, one page.
And I do not want to do that anymore.
At the San Sarah conference, the last one, when the guy got up and said the five greatest dangers to the world economy, one of them was hacking. And we all expected him to talk about Russia and all this stuff, but he said no, that he's not even talking about going into bank accounts and taking a dollar out. He said going into accounts like Social Security or all the bank records and just erasing everything.
Mm-hmm. Social Security?
Yeah. He said once the hackers are so sophisticated that those kinds of things. So if that happened, I mean, my only point is have something in writing somewhere that shows that Darren's an actually retired employee and can keep getting his check.
Mike, thank you, Mike.
Darren, I got your back.
I appreciate that.
In the meeting that we had, I did mention that this is unusual that we're on time or on schedule and under budget, but they explained that they just hadn't sent in a request for payment because they just completed a big part of the project. So we'll be on time and in budget.
Very good. Item 9, standing committees, internal governance committee.
That would be me. And we're going to talk about the travel policy today. We met a couple of weeks ago to discuss all the changes to the travel policy. The biggest issue is the move to per diem. We've had issues with receipts, being able to get receipts from all of the board members, from staff, and we're moving strictly to per diem for the meal allowance when we're out of out of town. So that's probably the biggest change. Other than that, there's a little cleanup of some language, but that is the main issue. And it is the recommendation of the committee that we adopt the policy as attached.
Are we bound by the state travel restrictions?
Not by the state travel restrictions, no. And we will be getting some of our costs from the USGSA so that we know what our allowances will be.
Okay. So, Donna, the entity that audits our travel receipts and our adherence to this policy, is it the county, Stanislaus County, that audits us?
Yes.
I believe it is, because we've been operating underneath their purchasing card policy.
Okay.
But it's not entirely their policy. We subscribe to parts of their policy, and other parts are Stan Sara specific.
Okay. But they are
the same with travel.
Well, this travel policy is strictly ours, and we won't be adhering to the county's policy anymore. Yeah. This allows us a little more flexibility. And we have that right as a separate legal entity.
And sometimes makes it difficult, too, because sometimes they report audit findings that are allowed under our bylaws, but not in the counties.
Yeah.
When we first set it up, we had the auditor do the auditing.
Okay.
Outside of the CEO's office. I don't know if it's still that way. I think so.
Yeah.
What are the think so?
I think
the
Interior
Water Division is under the auditor controller.
Yes, what are the controller?
You recommend this? I mean, you're for it. Mm-hmm. I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion by Mike Lynch, second by Mike O'Neill. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. We'll now move on to closed session. I know we have at least one item, correct? We are now back in open session. With regards to closed session, item 10A, there is nothing to report out, no action by the board. We've already done members forum item 11, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Second by Jegan. All those in favor?
Aye.